I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball. This is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, warmer from the low. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you guys. Joining me in segment number two, we're going to have Curtis Rogers report. He does absolutely amazing work over at 710 Seattle Sports. We're going to be discussing with him what to expect out of the American League West this season. Just some of the teams, some of the players that he's a little bit bullish/bearish on. Take a look at what we're going to get with the Seattle Mariners as well. And then in the final segment, going to be giving you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Monday as we touch them all and have a few day games today as well. So that's always nice. And if you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you have one of two ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GNN_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the 5-star review. And really didn't get in any Twitter questions today. I think that more of these will be coming once the college basketball season is over, because everyone wanted to obsess about the fouls/not fouls called on Zach Edey. But that said, we had a great day of baseball on Sunday. Let's take a look back at it, try to find some trends, and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The top over team in baseball last season was the Atlanta Braves, and well, they played an overwhelming series against the Philadelphia Phillies over the weekend as they actually take the loss in this one. That's not something that you see very often from the Atlanta Braves, but that said, they were able to put up some runs on the board along the way as the Philadelphia Phillies. They're able to get a win by a count of 5-4 in this one. Chris Sale did not necessarily have the world's worst debut with the Atlanta Braves. Gives up 2 runs over the course of 5 1/3 innings, but had the bullpen behind him fail him. Aaron Bummer, who's been living up to his name recently, gives up 2 runs in an inning, and then Joey Jimenez, pair of outs out of the bullpen, he gives up a run before A.J. Minter supplies his scoreless inning. Now, for Sale, he did allow a home run to Kyle Schwarber. First home run season was a leadoff home run. From there, he settled down, and for Ranger Suarez, he allowed 3 runs in 5 innings, including a home run of his own. That came in the first inning off of the bat of Ozzie Albies, second home run season. From there, he settled down as Jeff Hoffman, Matt Strom, Jose Alvarado, they all provided scoreless innings for Anthony Dominguez. Rough start to the season for him. He gives up a run in 2/3 of an inning, but Gregory Soto was able to get an out of the bullpen, and for the Philadelphia Phillies, they're able to salvage the series with at least 1 win, but the Mets, they could not do that. They get swept by the Milwaukee Brewers, 4-1 the final, as for the Milwaukee Brewers, Colin Ray said, hip, hip, hooray to a great start. 1 run surrendered in 5 innings. From there, Joel Piamps gives you 1 scoreless inning, and Brian Hudson, 3 scoreless innings out of him. He looked tremendous, and the Brewers win this game despite the fact that they leave 10 men on base. They did a solid job of being able to get into the bullpen. Yoan Ramirez, he gives up 2 runs in 3 innings. He was, I believe, the gentleman that threw at Rhys Hoskins, if I remember correctly, and Tyler McGill, he was not long for this game. Gives up 2 runs, just one of which was earned in 4 innings. It was a catcher's interference sort of situation from Omar Narváez. That was costly for him. Drew Smith, Brooks Raley, they both provide a scoreless setting, but the Mets, they just could do absolutely nothing with the bat in this series. They had one run or fewer in two out of the three games, so rough start for them. The Angels will indeed not go 0-162. They get a win over the Baltimore Orioles by a count of 4-1 to salvage one of the games in that series. As Reed Detmers, good start. One run surrendered over the course of five innings, punched out seven. You had Carlos Acevedo give you a scoreless inning. And then how about getting three scoreless innings out of the bullpen from Jose Soriano? And for the LA Angels, Taylor Ward was able to do it with the bat. He was able to get his second home run of the campaign. That comes off of one Tyler Wells, who did not pitch Wells, giving up four runs, three of which were earned over the course of six innings. From there, Jacob Webb, Yennier Cano, Dylan Tate all provided scoreless innings, but they do strand eight men on base in this one, so a little bit of a rough ordeal there. The Pirates and the Miami Marlins had two of their games go to extra innings, and it was the Pirates coming out on top on both of those, and they take all four games from the Miami Marlins, 9-7 the final. As for Pittsburgh, Bailey Falter did indeed live up to his name. He gave up a pair of home runs, six runs in total over the course of four innings. The problem was the Miami Marlins, they got a 5-0 lead, and they could not hold on to it. As going deep off of Falter, you had Avisio Garcia get his first home run of the campaign, Jazz Chisholm his first as well, but then you had old Nick Flash Gordon also be able to get a home run in this one that actually forced extra innings. That came off of David Benar. That was the lone other run surrendered by the Pirates in this game. Benar gives up that home run in an inning, but Ryan Borucki, Aroldis Chapman, Hunter Stranton, they will all provide a scoreless inning, and Luis Ortiz was able to give you two scoreless innings. And for the Pittsburgh Pirates, they do strand 12 men on base, but they're able to go 5-16 with men in scoring position, including having Rowdy Tellez be able to give you his first home run of the campaign. That comes off of one Vladimir Gutierrez, who was pretty much piggybacking off of Trevor Rogers. Rogers, he was in the neighborhood of giving up runs, giving up four in the course of five innings. Gutierrez gives up that home run, three runs in total over the course of four innings before Tanner Scott comes into the game in the 10th inning, gives up two unearned runs in an inning due to his own fielding error. So those are runs that should be credited to him. I'm always one of those people that feels like when the pitcher commits the error, you get stuck with the runs. But that's a conversation for another show on another day. But here's a conversation that needs to be had. And the Twins got blown out 11-0 by the Kansas City Royals. That was rough, to say the least, for the Royals. They had generated one run of offense in the first two games of the series, one run apiece, but in this one, they were able to explode. Kyle Isabel, Bobby Witt Jr., Nelson Velasquez, along Salvador Perez, all get their first home run of the campaign, and all but one of those home runs came off of Bailey Ober. For Ober, he got four outs, and he gave up eight runs, all of which were earned, including three bombs. Not great, to say the least. Cody Funderburk from there gives up two runs, one of which was earned in 1 2/3 innings. Dan Duarte, two scoreless innings. Jay Jackson, a scoreless inning. And Cole Sands, he gives up a home run of his own in the course of two innings. But for the Twins, absolutely nothing doing in this game. Royce Lewis still dealing with an injury, by the way. That's not great, as Brady Singer had the Twins singing the blues. 10 punch-outs, 7 scoreless innings from there. Jordan Lyles came out of the bullpen for a scoreless inning, and Matt Sauer was able to give you a scoreless inning as well. Very funny to see Jordan Lyles coming out of the bullpen, but yeah, that's where the Royals are at right now. And for the Texas Rangers, they were able to take two of three from the Cubs, but one of those games was not on Sunday. The Cubs, they're able to get one of the games in this series, 9-5. They're able to take down the Walker Texas Rangers as Christopher Morel, he goes deep off of 55 Shades of John Gray for his first home run of the campaign. As for Gray, rough go of it here. Five runs, four of which were earned, given up in 3 2/3 innings. Jose Leclerc, he gives up four runs while getting just two outs out of the bullpen. You did have two scoreless innings out of Yuri Rodriguez and Jose Ureña. Did not Ureña all over the game. 2 1/3 innings scoreless, and Jordan Lance was able to give you an out of the bullpen. And for Texas, relatively solid offense. They put up five runs in this one, and they were able to get to Jordan Wicks, who gave up five runs in four innings. Problem was, only two of them was earned, as you had Dansby Swanson have a error out there in the field. You had Christopher Morel come in an error as well, and then the bullpen from there went to work. Hector Inares, Adbert Alzolay, Mark Leiter Jr. I'll give you a scoreless inning, and Julian Merriweather, two scoreless innings for the Cubs to be able to get one of the games in that series. One of your top under teams in all baseball last season, that was the San Francisco Giants. They played 57.5% of their games to the under last year. That was the highest mark in all of baseball. Well, for the San Francisco Giants, we've been seeing a little bit of the opposite recently, as they played another over against the San Diego Padres on Sunday, 13-4 the final. And Matter of fact, all four of their games in this series did go over the total, and we'll get into it in a few minutes. Lots of overs thus far this season in Major League Baseball, but Theryo Estrada, he was able to get a home run off the King, Michael King, for his first of the campaign for Michael King for the Padres. He goes just four innings, giving up two runs, including that home run from there. Pedro Avila, he goes three innings, so a bit of a piggyback situation. He gave up two runs, and then you had Wandy Peralta supply a scoreless inning, and you also had a scoreless inning from Yuki Matsui. But for the San Diego Padres, they just completely tattooed the San Francisco Giants. 7 of 18 with men in scoring position. You had Dalton Jeffries get the start, and he was not long for this game as he gives up home runs to Luis Capusano and Ah Sung Kim, both of their first home runs of the campaign. And for Jeffries, he got 6 outs, and he gave up 9 runs, 5 of which were earned, including those 2 bombs. From there, you had to get 3 innings out of Kei-Wei Tang in his MLB debut, giving up 3 runs. Ryan Walker was able to give you a scoreless inning, and then you had to turn to the old position player towards the back half of the game as Landon Ropp, he was able to give you a scoreless inning, and Tyler Fitzgerald, backup shortstop, was able to go for an inning. He gave up a run along the way, and I think he induced a double play, so shout out to him. And the Oakland A's, they will not go winless as well. 4-3, they're able to take down the Cleveland Guardians. A's starts back half of the season last year, getting a run and a half. They actually weren't the world's worst team in the world. This was their first cover on the run line, but that's it for the Cleveland Guardians. Carlos Cookie Carrasco does not look to be in prime form, giving up 3 runs in 5 innings. From there, Tim Aaron, Hunter Gaddis, they both lend a scoreless inning. Scott Barlow, he is charged with the losing run. He gives up a run and an inning as Eli Morgan tried to hold the runners on, while was unable to do so. And for the Oakland AAAs, a relatively solid start out of Paul Blackburn. Walks the plank to 7 scoreless. Not just a solid start, a very good start, but bullpen tried to blow it on him. Danny Jimenez, scoreless inning, but Austin Adams, Lucas Hirsch. Between the two of them, they got an inning and they gave up 3 runs. So the Oakland A's bullpen, still one to not be trusted, but the Seattle Mariners, they are one to be trusted. Ron Muncy, the offense was not. 5-1, the Boston Red Sox are able to take down the Seattle Mariners. We'll talk more about the Seattle Mariners in the next segment with our good friend Curtis Rogers. But Garrett Whitlock, solid start. 8 punch-outs, 1 run surrendered over the course of 5 innings. Greg Weisert, a scoreless inning. You had Yoli Rodriguez get a pair of outs out of the bullpen. And then you had 7 outs for a save from Justin Slayton, scoreless. And for Boston, pair of home runs as you were able to get home run number 2 of the season off the bat of Tyler O'Neill. That comes off of Bryce Miller. And Miller also gives one up to Emmanuel Valdez. His first home run of the campaign for Miller. Did not have the start that he was looking for in this one. 4 runs surrendered over the course of 5 innings. Cody Bolton does give up a run and an inning, but Colin Sider, 2 scoreless innings. And Trent Thornton was able to supply a scoreless inning of his own. In Sunday Night Baseball, we saw the St. Louis bullpen completely collapse as the LA Dodgers, they come back with 3 runs in the 8th to win by a count of 5-4. You don't see a lot of one-run wins from the LA Dodgers. Last 2 seasons, they've won 100-plus games. In both seasons, they had less than 20 one-run wins apiece. And for Steven Matz, he did his part for the St. Louis Cardinals, was able to hold it down with giving up 2 runs in 5 1/3 innings. From there, Andrew Kittredge, pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless, but Andre Pallante gives up 2 runs in 1 1/3 innings, including a home run. And then the King, John King, was sent to the outhouse as he gave up a home run that turned out to be the winning run to Max Muncy. Muncy's first of the campaign to Oscar Hernandez, went deep off of Pallante, his third. And Gavin Stone did not have the start that he was hoping for. Gives up 3 runs over the course of 5 innings, but did punch out 6 while giving up 7 hits along the way. Alex Vesia, unearned run given up in his inning of work as you had a catcher's interference error hurt him. But Nabel Chrisman, 2 scoreless innings. Danny Hudson, he's able to supply a scoreless inning as well. So they're able to get the job done out there. And also being able to get the job done, our DK Network right, a pick of the under. We have not seen a lot of unders in baseball to begin the season, but you know what? We will gladly take this one. As for the Detroit Tigers, they go on the road, they get the job done against the Chicago White Sox 3-2. And for the Chicago White Sox, they start out 0-3. Can't say I'm necessarily too surprised. This team is going to stink on ice. But for the Chicago White Sox, Eric Fetty Wap, relatively solid start here. Goes 4 2/3 innings, allows 2 runs. Now, both of those runs were via solo home runs. As going deep, you had Jason Rogers get his first home run season, and Carey Carpenter his first. From there, the White Sox bullpen honestly did not do a bad job. You did have a run given up in 2/3 of an inning by Steven Wilson, but John Brebbia, Tim Hill, they combined for a scoreless inning. Michael Kopech, 1 2/3 innings, scoreless. 3 strikeouts along the way. Tanner Banks, a scoreless inning. And for the White Sox. Pair of home runs of their own as Corey Lee get his first home run of the campaign. Paul DeJong his first for DeJong. He goes deep off of Andrew Chafin, who gives up that home run in his inning of work. Jack Flaherty gives up the other one. And in his debut for the Tigers, not bad. He gives up that home run, but seven punch-outs, one run allowed in six innings. And then you had the duo of Tyler Holton and Jason Foley combined for two scoreless innings. They're able to lock it down. They're able to get that thing to the window for the Detroit Tigers. And hey, write-up picks start up 4-1. We like to see that, and gotta love to see the Cincinnati Reds be able to get a 5-4 win over the Washington Nationals. For the Nationals, they had Jake Irvin give a mediocre start, nothing great, nothing terrible. Three runs surrendered over the course of five innings. From there, the bullpen did their part. Dylan Floro, along with Hunter Harvey, both supply a squirrel signing. You also got a squirrel signing out of Robert Garcia. And then in the ninth inning, Kyle Finnegan went sideways. We've seen this from him time and time again. Three runs surrendered while giving the team two outs as going deep off of him in the ninth inning. Christian Encarnacion Strand and Will Benson both get their first home run of the campaign as Nick Martinez gives up three runs of his own over the course of five innings. He did give up a home run to CJ Abrams' first home run of the campaign, and then we had home run number one of the season from Trey Lipscomb as well. He went deep a little bit later on off of Buck Farmer. For Farmer, gives up that home run in his inning of work. And TJ Antone not get a single out and give up a run as well. But Emilio Pagan, Fernando Cruz, Lucas Sims, they're all able to supply a scoreless inning. So the Reds find a way to be able to get the job done and get the win. And how about the revamped New York Yankees? They take all four games from the Houston Astros, 4-3 the final. Astros were terrible on the run line as a favorite last season, and right now they're looking to be the same. Jose Altuve was able to do his part in this one. Had a home run off of Clark Schmidt and another extra base hit. His first of the campaign as for Mr. Schmidt, he gives up three runs in five and a third innings, but this Yankees bullpen is very good and they held it down. Caleb Ferguson, Jonathan Loaisiga, Clay Holmes all supply a scoreless inning, and then you get a pair of outside the bullpen scoreless from Nick Birdie. Meanwhile, for the Yankees, no home runs in this one, but they go 3-8 with Ben in scoring position as Josh Hader. He gives up the winning run, giving up a run in an inning for J.P. Franz. Not a great start, not a bad one. Three runs surrendered in five and two-thirds innings. Tanner Scott was able to give you a scoreless inning, and Brian Abreu, he gets four outs out of the bullpen scoreless, but the Astros off to a little bit of a rough start to the season, and so is the Tampa Bay Rays. The Rays were able to take two games in the series against the Blue Jays, but their two losses were in very, very emphatic fashion. As for the Blue Jays, 9-2, they completely pound the Tampa Bay Rays. Kevin Gausman, not long for this game. He was dealing with some arm fatigue, 69 pitches. Gives up a home run over the course of 4 2/3 innings going deep for the Rays. You had Randy Arozarena get his second home run season, and Isaac Paredes a little bit later on off of Chad Green gets his first campaign for Green. He gives up a home run in his inning of work, but Mitch White in long relief, three scoreless innings. Nate Pearson gets a pair of outs out of the bullpen, and then he did have a pair of home runs for the Toronto Blue Jays. Justin Turner down for what? His first as a Blue Jay. And then Davis Schneider was able to get his first home run in the campaign as for the Tampa Bay Rays. They had Tyler Alexander give up both of those as they utilized an opener for him. And John Armstrong, he had a scoreless first inning. And then Alexander, who comes over from the Tigers, well, they're going to need to do some more reclamating for this reclamation project. He gives up five runs in five innings. Jacob Waghese back from there. In one inning, he gave up four walks and two runs. That's not so great, as Garrett Clevenger had to clean up the mess. He went for two scoreless innings, but by then, damage had been very well done. And if you're taking a look at the Colorado Rockies, they do have one win to their credit, and I'm not sure how many more they're going to get. Yeah, the Arizona Diamondbacks pound them by a count of 5-1, and for the Colorado Rockies, this was not what you were hoping for from Ryan Feltner. Five runs, three of which were earned, given up in five innings. You'd have Victor Vodnik give you two scoreless innings, and Jake Bird a scoreless inning, but this Colorado Rockies team is miserable with their offense away from home. And for these Arizona Diamondbacks, Brandon fought. Well, he fought to keep them off the scoreboard. One run surrendered in five innings. Scott McGill, two scoreless innings, and then Ryan Thompson, Kevin Ginkle. They were both able to supply the team with a scoreless inning as well. And if you're looking at the trends in Major League Baseball right now, how about an overwhelming start to the season? The over is currently hitting at 64.2%. 34 overs, 19 unders, and 2 pushes thus far. While favorites, they are having a miserable time of being able to cover the run line. 22-33 on the run line, but straight up 31-24 on the money line. And that has been with the road teams really being able to dominate. Road teams, 34-21 straight up on the money line. We've seen a lot of road favorites to begin the season, so we shall see if we get more of that moving forward. But man, oh man, a very fun day of baseball on Sunday. Now let's take a little bit more of a look at the American League West and the Seattle Mariners with our good friend Curtis Rogers. He does great work over at 710 Seattle Sports, and he joins me next right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And it is always great to be joined by this man as he is a voice of the Seattle Mariners pre- and post-game shows, as it is our good friend Curtis Rogers joining me. He does tremendous work over at 710 Seattle Sports. Obviously taking a look at the Seattle Mariners, but if it's out there in the Pacific Northwest, he's covering it, everything from the Seattle Kraken, all that we're seeing in college basketball with the coaching hires that we're seeing out there in the great state of Washington, and so much more. You're able to follow him on Twitter/X at a kid from Kent. That's also his Instagram handle, and it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, Greg, no problem. I always love coming on. Baseball season's here. We are getting back into the swing of things, no pun intended, and it's now part of our daily lives, which is incredible. It's always on in the background, and these games count. We talk about it all the time, but this is the best time of year for just anything sports related. You've got March Madness going on the college basketball side of things, but the start of baseball season, that really brings a smile to my face.
Oh, I'm right there with you. I am so glad that we've got baseball back in our lives. And first things first, how about if we take a look at the team that you cover the most? That'd be the Seattle Mariners. They're out there in an AL West where the landscape is very, very different, because typically we just have it as a foregone conclusion that the Oakland A's are dead stinking last and that we go from there. But I feel like the LA Angels are going to be right there at the bottom with what we've seen these first few days against the Baltimore Orioles. Good grief. It looks like they're going to get completely lambasted. But how do you take a look at this West where we've got an Astros team that to begin the season against the Yankees, they've been having their fair share of struggles, have a few question marks with the pitching staff, and for the Seattle Mariners, they made a few moves in the offseason, including bringing back Mitch Haniger for seemingly a 17th time to revamp things.
Yeah, looking at the AL West right now, it is going to be a three-team race. It is going to be the same three teams that it was last year, Texas, Houston, and Seattle. And looking at the Mariners right now, they're dealing with their fair share of injuries in the pitching staff. Brian Wu, he's going to be out for a little bit dealing with some elbow inflammation, the same injury that sidelined him at the end of last season briefly. So they'll have Emerson Hancock pitching in his place. And then the bullpen, two guys who they were going to be relying upon heavily this season have not been able to get healthy. And that's Matt Brash, who there was some fear maybe he'd have to undergo Tommy John surgery. Doesn't look like that's going to happen, but I wouldn't expect him back before May. Gregory Santos, a guy who they got from the White Sox, I wouldn't expect him back before maybe late April, early May either. So they're kind of piecing things together in the bullpen. At the end of spring training, they did bring in veteran reliever Ryan Stanek, who has pitched a lot of big games in his career with the Astros and with the Rays. So that was, you know, a nice pickup for the bullpen. I'm looking at this Mariners team, though. I think what is going to decide it for them is that offense. Can they generate runs? And can they avoid the swing and miss like they did last season? You look up and down that roster a year ago, you had Teoscar Hernandez and Gino Suarez both striking out over 200 times during the season. Jared Kelnick struck out a bunch last year. All three of those guys are gone. Remains to be seen if the replacements that they got for those guys are an improvement or not. Offensively, the Mariners, that is going to be their big question mark. But I look at Texas, I look at Houston. I think even though Houston has gotten off to the slow start against the Yankees, I would expect them to still be in the thick of things in the AL West. And looking at the Rangers, they didn't really need to go out and spend much this offseason because you're going to get a full year of Evan Carter and you're going to get a full year of Wyatt Langford, who you brought up from AAA, where he finished last season. So that's where their improvement is going to be. And then also they're going to end up getting Max Scherzer back at some point this season, maybe even Jacob deGrom. So I look at the Rangers, I don't think they really needed to go out and make a splashy move this offseason. Their reinforcements were going to come from within, and I think they're going to be a very, very good team this season once again. Obviously winning the World Series a year ago, but I think they could be potentially even better than they were if everybody is healthy.
Absolutely, and I do think that we are going to be in for a really good year out there in the AL West, sans those two teams I mentioned before, the Angels and the Oakland A's. And how much do you think the other three teams can benefit from the fact that you've got two teams in the Angels and the A's that I don't want to call them automatic wins, but at the same time, if you're not winning two-thirds of your games against the A's and the Angels, in my opinion, you're not keeping up with the rest of the teams in the division.
Yeah, I think that's a very great point, because you've got only 13 games now against each divisional opponent with the more spread out schedule across Major League Baseball, more interleague games. We saw this come into play last year where games against bottom feeding teams became must wins in a way, because the opportunities to play them were going to be few and far between as the season rolled along. The Mariners last season, I believe, went 12-1 against the Oakland A's, taking advantage of a team that was historically bad throughout last season. So, yeah, I think when you come across a team that is expected to be bad and is expected to not be competitive, you absolutely have to take advantage of it when the opportunity presents itself. The A's and the Angels are going to be at the bottom of this division. That's going to be a lot of opportunities for Texas, Houston, and Seattle to really pad that record and to really, you know, really keep themselves in that American League West race, because, you know, you're only getting so many opportunities, 26 games of your schedule against the A's and Angels. Meanwhile, you've got 26 against the other two teams that you're jockeying for position with in the American League West. You've got to take advantage of those opportunities when they come your way.
Absolutely. I do think so as well. And just watching these two teams in their first series, the Oakland A's against the Cleveland Guardians and the Angels versus the Baltimore Orioles, came into the season thinking it would be a long year for them. I have seen nothing to make me think otherwise, as Curtis Rogers, who does great work over at 710 Seattle Sports, is joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And just how do you take a look at the landscape of the American League? Because I do think that much of it is going to be running through the AL West, but I certainly do think that it is a much more open American League than the National League, because I look in the National League and you've got the Dodgers, you've got the Atlanta Braves, and then I think that it's a very big difference between those two teams and everyone else out there in the National League. Meanwhile, in the American League, we just mentioned it, those three teams in the AL West, I think that they're pretty tightly knit together, though all three teams, they do it in a little bit of a different way. I take a look at the AL East, and certainly I think that the Orioles are the best team in that division right now, but you put the three teams from the AL West against the Orioles, I think that you get a good series regardless of what combination you've got. And I just feel like there's more openness in general in the American League than the National League.
I would agree with you on that, especially with how crazy the AL Central could get. I mean, does anybody want to win that division? I would imagine, you know, last year it was so wide open. You had no idea who was going to win that division. And so you kind of get that sense this season. I know Cleveland last year, they were competitive, but it was just kind of like, well, somebody's got to do it. Minnesota, to me, is a team I think they could potentially make some noise in that division. Kansas City could also kind of surprise. I like Cole Reagans atop their rotation. He's kind of a dark horse Cy Young candidate for me. I really like that pickup that they made with him about a year ago. But looking at the AL East, yeah, Baltimore is the class of that division right now, and they're going to be atop that division for quite some time, especially considering the strength of that farm system that they have. I mean, they don't even have Jackson Holliday up yet, and he's going to be up probably in a matter of weeks, and they're going to be even better than what they are on paper. I love the addition of Corbin Burnes, even if Corbin Burnes may not be as dominant as he was a couple seasons ago when he was the National League Cy Young Award winner. I still think he is a number one guy in a rotation. And that's something that Baltimore was missing entirely last year, was that guy every fifth day who could go out there and give you six, seven strong innings. It just wasn't in the cards for them last season. The biggest thing for me, though, with Baltimore is how do you replace the innings that were pitched by Felix Bautista last year. He's undergone Tommy John surgery. Probably won't see him at all this season. So how do you lock those games down at the very end of the games? You had Cano last year, and then he gave the ball to Bautista. That was a really good 1-2 punch for that bullpen at the end of the season. But right now, you don't have Bautista. So it's going to be a bit of a mystery as to how the Orioles are going to close out games. But I like them in the AL East right now. I like the Rays as well to be very competitive. I think the Yankees could very much threaten for a playoff spot this season. Obviously, the injury to Gerrit Cole is going to be the biggest mystery with that team. We don't know when he's going to come back. We don't know how effective he'll be if he comes back. They're kind of living and dying right now with Gerrit Cole's elbow.
Yep, they certainly are. And when it comes to the Baltimore Orioles, they did sign Craig Kimbrell in the offseason, and I can't say that he's necessarily Captain Reliable, so... And so he's going to be a little bit of an adventure, but I do think that they are going to be that dominant team out there in the AL East. But I do take a look at that entire AL East, and I do think that it's going to be a competitive division. You've had a chance to see the Boston Red Sox up close and in person last few days, as that's the first series of the season for the Seattle Mariners. They had to pull out that close 1-0 game on Friday where George Kirby looked absolutely tremendous. But I take a look at that entire division, and I don't necessarily see one truly weak link. A lot of people have the Boston Red Sox penciled in as that last team, and I wouldn't disagree. But at the same time, if the Boston Red Sox are your worst team in the division, I think that that tells us that that's a division that, once again, is going to be relatively strong and is going to have a lot of competitive teams, but not necessarily one great team.
Yeah, I don't see a team in that division winning fewer than probably like 77, 78 ball games. You put the Red Sox in the American League Central, they're probably fighting for a division crown. Like,
that's, oh, they're probably winning it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's how deep the American League East is right now and has been for the last couple of seasons. You could make a case for the Blue Jays, too. That's a team that we haven't talked about yet to potentially make the American League wild card. They've been a very competitive team over the last 4 to 5 seasons. They've got a young roster still. So, yeah, you could make the case for a lot of teams in the American League East, but I think it's just going to be a bloodbath watching those teams fight against each other every single day this season. I think the Orioles, though, just with the amount of young talent that they have, adding Corbin Burns, it's just going to be too much to deny them the American League East crown, especially coming off a 100-win season a year ago. I think this Orioles team is building something pretty special. And, I mean, considering the amount of losing that they had to endure and also the ownership that they had to endure, now you're on the other end of it. They get the ownership change, too, on opening day. I mean, it must be really nice to be an Orioles fan right about now. I think that's the most hope that organization has had since maybe like the late 90s with the Cal Ripken, Eddie Murray, Brady Anderson years.
Yeah, and they were able to get Corbin Burns from the Milwaukee Brewers for the equivalent of D.L. Hall and an ice cream sandwich. So that was a great deal for them. Being a Milwaukee Brewers fan, I'm a little bit salty about that. And hey, how about if we do take a look at what we're getting in the National League, because I do think that it is going to be very fascinating to see what the teams not named the Braves and the LA Dodgers do, because I think that they are clearly the top two teams out there in that entire just National League. But I take a look at some of these other teams, like I'm very much shocked down on the Brewers, but it feels like there's a lot of younger upside teams, like the Pittsburgh Pirates are coming to mind for me, the Cincinnati Reds just looking out there in the Central. You've got a few teams out there in the American League East or in the National League East that I think are going to have some intrigue as well. Like if the Mets can find any sort of hitting whatsoever, that'd be terrific. But I just take a look at the National League outside of those two teams, and I do feel like it's very much a mismatch with those teams, and it's just all about which team is able to develop their young talent best, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if there's a team like the Diamondbacks that kind of makes their way into the World Series as a surprise in the National League. And, I mean, look, I really like what the Diamondbacks did this offseason, not just kind of sitting on their hands after making a surprise World Series appearance. They went out and spent money. They added a lot of payroll. I know they brought in a few guys. They extended Lourdes Gurriel, who was a huge contributor on that team last year. Really like what they did. If there's a team, I think, that is going to challenge the Braves and challenge the Dodgers for National League supremacy, I feel like the Phillies are probably the safest bet. I mean, they're just 2 years removed from a World Series appearance of their own. They've got a really good thing going there in Philadelphia. Yeah, if we're looking at a team maybe not in that realm, I really like you pointing out the Cincinnati Reds. They're a team that has undergone a full facelift over the last couple of years. The Mariners have made numerous trades with them, taking advantage of the fire sale that was going on in Cincinnati, you know, with mixed results. I think Luis Castillo has been a smashing success here in Seattle. Geno Suarez had a good run here in Seattle before he was dealt this offseason. And then Jesse Winker was an absolute failure. You know, speaking to a Brewers fan, I know you can attest to Jesse Winker and how miserable he has been the last couple of seasons with a bat in his hand. But yeah, I think Cincinnati is an interesting team to watch. I think they've got a lot of good pieces. Maybe not a ton of great pieces, but definitely good pieces. We don't know yet what Ellie De La Cruz can be as an everyday player. Last year came up, had some pretty spectacular moments. The stat sheet kind of left a little bit to be desired. You look at like Spencer Steer. I know TJ Friedl is going to be out for a little bit. Jake Fraley gave them some really good at-bats. I think Christian Encarnacio Strand is going to give them some power at first base. So much so that they said goodbye to a franchise icon and Joey Votto. So this Reds team, I think, should be a very improved team from what they've been the last couple of seasons. And I think they're taking some good strides. Obviously, they're never going to be a team that spends huge on the free agent market or makes a big acquisition via trade. But I really like what they've done. The big question mark, though, I know they were going to be reliant heavily upon Noelvi Marte. He got suspended 80 games prior to the season, so we won't see him till the season's second half. That's going to be a big blow. He's one of their top bats in that farm system. So hopefully when he comes back, he can contribute.
That means that there will be no Marte Parte to begin the season for the Cincinnati Reds, but it is always a party when we get you aboard, Curtis. You do such an amazing job taking a look at this great game of baseball that we all know and love and covering everything out there in the Pacific Northwest. So love to get people at home, know it's all on tap for you and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, follow along on Twitter and Instagram at A Kid From Kent this week. We've got coming up on Thursday, a new edition of Mariners Extra Innings, where we will preview their first road trip, which begins in Milwaukee against the Milwaukee Brewers. We'll commence on Thursday. It'll download probably around 9 p.m. Pacific time for those who are interested. And plenty of Mariners coverage going on. Mariners pre and post game all weekend long, all week long. So Seattle Sports is the place to be for any kind of Mariners coverage, any kind of AL West coverage. We've got you covered up here. And Greg, always appreciate hopping on with you. The first of I hope many baseball podcasts we jam out this season. It's going
to
be a fun one.
Oh, absolutely. We will be sure to be getting on Curtis Rogers plenty throughout the season. He's a wealth of knowledge when it comes to this great game of baseball. Does a great job following day in, day out with the Seattle Mariners, but does a great job looking at all 30 teams, and every time we're able to get him on this show, we take advantage of that. A big thanks to Curtis for joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Monday as we touch them all.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, Right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. It is always a pleasure to be joined by one of our good friends, Curtis Rogers, who does such a good job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love, doing pre- and post-game hosting for the Seattle Mariners, taking a look at all 30 teams here in the MLB every single time he joins the show. Such a good job of being able to take a look at everything that we're getting. So a big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. And now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this MLB Monday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter/X feed at @GNR41, and we're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the National League games first in terms of time order, then the American League games in terms of time order, and the Interleague games, those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. So how about if we get things started with 901, 902 on the card? It is the Colorado Rockies. They hit the road. They're facing off against the Chicago Cubs, as it is going to be, hopefully I say the same correctly. I'm sure I'm going to screw it up. Shota Imanaga going for the Cubs, and Dakota Hudson is on the bump for the Rockies. Only Circa has a total up on this game. You'll find that with Wrigley Field games typically. Due to the win situation, they will hold off on posting up a total, but right now their total is 7. The under is minus 125. The over is plus 105, with the Cubs going to be finding them as between minus $2 and minus 215 favorites. Anywhere between plus 175 and plus 185 is your number on the Rockies if you're looking at the run line. Right now, DraftKings, I'm finding a plus 110 on this Cubs run line, and that's what I'd be looking at. Set the Cubs as a minus 196 favorite and was willing to go pretty much to minus 102. On the run line, and when it comes to wind situation, by the way, going to be very, very heavily blowing in, probably about 20 plus miles per hour winds blowing in, and that should be the friend of Dakota Hudson, someone who spent quite a bit of time out there in the NL Central pitching for the St. Louis Cardinals, has always been a relative pitcher contact guy, someone that I just really don't like his pitching style in general. He's doing everything humanly possible to deny home runs, but and that's about all he does well. He gives up a lot of bases. He gives up a lot of walks as well. As a matter of fact, his walks per nine rate last season was 3.5, and when you're a pitcher contact guy that is getting fewer than 5.5 strikeouts per nine innings, that's a terrible recipe for anything. And then you've got Imanaga, who comes over from Japan. He was very much a sensation, to say the least, when it came to spring training. Someone who, when he was over there in the MPB, he was able to light the world on fire. He did not quite get the same level of success that Yoshinobu Yamamoto was able to have, but he was able to do a very solid job over there. I do think that it's going to travel well, as he's got some relatively good swing and miss stuff for the Cubs, and he's backed up by a much better bullpen than what you're going to find for the Colorado Rockies. This Cubs bullpen was relatively league average last season. Jose Quas is able to give you a sub-4 ERA. Like the pickup of Yancy Almonte, he and Edward Elzalay going to be able to do a solid job towards back half of games. Now they've got Drew Smyly coming out of the pen as well. I think that'll be solid in that role as well. And then for the Colorado Rockies, they had one good bullpen piece last season in Brent Suter, and that was about it. Now you're relying upon Jake Bird, Nick Mears, Tyler Kinley to be able to hold down the fort, and I just don't think that they're going to be able to do so. Now, one thing that actually helps out the Colorado Rockies is that they haven't had to go from elevation to sea level to elevation to sea level quite yet, because spring training out there in Arizona, they don't have to deal with those elevation changes, so that actually helps them out a little bit. Ryan McMahon off to a nice start, 6 hits in that series against the Arizona Diamondbacks, but just take a look up and down the boulevard, and got a lot of guys, in my opinion, that don't have a lot of power. You did have Nolan Jones have 20-plus home runs a season ago, but who's really that power bat? Elias Diaz, Chris Bryant. Chris Bryant got horribly overpaid after he had a few nice seasons with the Chicago Cubs, has just not been able to find it ever since getting signed by the Rockies. And then for the Cubs, this is a very balanced lineup, a lineup that was in the top six in the big leagues in terms of runs per game last season. Christopher Morel, Ian Happ, these are guys that are going to give you about 20 or so home runs, do a solid job moving the line. Same goes for Dansby Swanson. You know that Nico Horner isn't going to give you a ton of pop, but he's going to find a way on base. Cody Bellinger can be one of the hottest hitters in all baseball, does a good job of being able to find a way to be able to move the line as well. Going up against a pitcher in Dakota Hudson, in which I have some pretty good familiarity with, I do think that this is going to be rough for the Colorado Rockies. And even though you're probably not going to get a whole bunch of home runs and round trippers in this game, I did set my total at 7.3. Hudson puts a lot of guys on base just in the way that he walks guys in general. And even if you have the wind blowing as far in as you do in this one, that's not going to help out with regards to the walks situation, which I think he's going to struggle with. And I do think that the Cubs just have more depth in general than the Colorado Rockies. I did set this line at a minus 186 on the money line. Personally, I'm going to be looking at minus one or two or less on the run line. And here at a 7, if this goes on to 6.5, we'll be willing to go over as well. So my total of 7.3. 903, 904 on the betting board. The Washington Nationals, they play host to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Marco Gonzalez goes for the Buccos, and Mackenzie Gore is on the bump for Washington, and Washington is a slight favorite between minus 113 to minus 120. Even money to plus 105. Your number on Pittsburgh, 8.5 to 9 is the total. On the 9, unders anywhere between minus 125 to minus 135. The overs between plus 105 to plus 115. Seeing one straight 8.5 out there. The over is minus 110, and the under is minus 110. Personally, I set my total at a 9.1. I would rather take that big plus money over on 9 rather than just take like a minus 110, minus 115 on the over of 8.5. You're really able to maximize profit. That way, I've just found that there are very, very few games that actually land on the number in baseball. And for Marco Gonzalez, I'm just not very bullish on him in general. He was out there for the Seattle Mariners in the first 2 months last season. And yeah, the 4-1 record is nice, but he had a 5.22 ERA. He doesn't give up a ton of deep balls in general. The walks, he's able to keep those under control. He's not a strikeout guy, though. Last year, he was getting only about 6 strikeouts per 9 innings. He leaves himself very, very susceptible to getting stung pretty hard. Now, you got a Washington Nationals team that they don't necessarily have a whole bunch of thumpers in their lineup. They've tried to be able to revamp this a little bit by bringing in Joey Gallo, but Joey Gallo currently has as many hits as myself thus far this season. That's not great, to say the least, and I don't think that that's going to pan out. Jesse Winker, he has been a miserable hitter the last few seasons. Actually, off to an ace start first 3 games of the season. I don't know if that's going to be lasting, but you've got guys like Kiber Ruiz, Joey Meneses, they're able to move the line. I think that they're going to be able to get some good production out of Eddie Rosario. He's someone that a season ago with the Atlanta Braves, he was able to find a way to be able to get on base. He's got functional power, not amazing, but he was able to go off for 21 bombs a season ago. And then you take a look at this Pittsburgh Pirates lineup, and it's been one of the best in all of baseball to start out this season. I don't know if they're going to be averaging north of 6 runs per game moving forward, but you do have guys that are able to find a way to get on base. Cabrian Hayes, Brian Reynolds are certainly that, and Reynolds is a guy that gives you both on base and power. He had north of 20 home runs a season ago. Jack Swinitsky is a little bit of an all or nothing hitter, and you need O'Neill Cruz to be someone that's able to be consistent. And through the first series of the season, he had a home run. He was able to give you a 438 on base. So far, so good. Want to see a little bit more of that moving forward. And Henry Davis might be the guy that's behind the learning curve a little bit of a rough series from and last year in general. When he was called up to the big leagues, he didn't necessarily seem overly ready, but for the Buccos, they are going to be able to back up Marco Gonzalez with a better bullpen. I like what Ryan Barucci brings to the table. He, David Benar, you're able to throw in there Jose Hernandez, guys like this. These are guys that have been able to give you a sub-4 ERA. Now, looks like Hernandez might be dealing with a little bit of an injury, so that's a bit of a concern. You've got to roll to Chapman, who, as a closer, I don't know if I trust them. 7th or 8th inning guy, relatively fine, and they go up against Washington Nationals bullpen. That you've got guys like Hunter Harvey, Derek Law, Matt Barnes, that they're not amazing, but at the same time, they're not bad. They're not going to completely let you down. And for Mackenzie Gore, very high upside pitcher, a guy that was able to give you 10 punch-outs per 9 innings last season, needs to reduce on the hard contact, gave up 2 home runs per 9 innings. He certainly does give up his fair share of walks as well, but I do like his overall just arsenal. I do think that he's going to be able to put it together this year. I do think that the Nationals take it to the Pirates in this spot. Semi-line at a minus 129, I'm going to be willing to take the Nats money line. I do think that they get to the Pirates here, like I said, between the 8.5 to a 9, I would rather take that plus money 9 over to go along with this Nationals money line. 905, 906 on the betting board. It is the Cincinnati Reds. Yes, we are on the Cincinnati Bill Belichick. They throw to face off against the Philadelphia Phillies. Christopher Sanchez goes for the Phillies. Andrew Abbott is on the bump for Cincinnati. Cincinnati between a plus 140 to a plus 148 underdog, between minus 155 to minus 166. The number on Philadelphia, 8.5 to 9 is the total. We're finding the under anywhere between minus 125 to minus 135 here as well. Over is between plus 105 and plus 115 on the 8.5. Over is minus 115 and the under is minus 105. I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the Reds. I was willing to take anything of a plus 137 or higher for Christopher Sanchez. Command was really good for him last year. He only gave up about 1.5 walks per 9 innings, and I do think that we are going to be able to find him to do a solid job of being able to keep things out in front of him, but he's not necessarily the highest strikeout guy. He only gives you about 8 strikeouts per 9 innings, and he has to go up against a Cincinnati Reds team that I think is going to be stinging the ball really well this season. You've got Christian Encarnacion Strand each out of the last 2 spring trainings has really been a revelation. I do think that he's going to be able to put himself forward in terms of having a nice year if Ellie De La Cruz can be any sort of consistent whatsoever, because when he was on last year, he was on. When he was off, but if he's able to just make the routine plays, because we know that he's able to make the exceptional plays, that's going to be big. You've got young guys like Tyler Stevenson that are relatively solid in the lineup. Spencer Steer is someone that I like. They signed Jubair Candelario in the offseason. So you've got some relatively good power, and you've got some guys that do a solid job of moving the line. And this is a bullpen that, as of right now, it's a much better form than that of the Philadelphia Phillies. Alexis Diaz did blow a save to begin the season, but I mean, he's one of the better closers that you're going to find in the big leagues. They pick up Brent Suter, who he's been dealing with a little bit of injury issues the last few seasons, but should be good to go here. You've got Lucas Sims, TJ Antone, guys that I really like coming out of the bullpen. And for the flip side, for the Philadelphia Phillies, when they play in like September or something like that, yeah, this bullpen might be in good form with guys like Sir Anthony Dominguez and company, but they just in general always struggle that first month of the season with their bullpen. Now, any team is going to struggle with the Atlanta Braves, but it does cause you to be worried about Jose Alvarado, who had a rough first series of the season, Connor Brogdon, I was mentioning Sir Anthony Dominguez, Luis Ortiz. These are guys that I expect to be able to pick it up moving forward, but going past that with the lineup, how about Trey Turner? He had a really rough start to the year last year before he picked it up. He's off to another rough start this season. Bryce Harper has been a little bit cold. I do think that he's going to be able to get things going. JT Realmuto, he's already got a home run this season. He's in relatively solid form, but that said, I do think that when it comes to this lineup in general, it is one that should have a few question marks until they are able to bust through a little bit. It's just a slow starting team in general. And then for Andrew Abbott, he certainly was someone that benefited a little bit from some variance and some fortunate balls in play, but this guy was able to get 10 punch outs per 9 innings last season, 3.87 ERA with a 4.20 fielding independent, did give up 3.5 walks per 9 innings. He did a relatively good strand rate to be able to get the numbers that he did, but I do take a look at him moving forward, and I think that he's going to be a tremendous pitcher in the league. You take a look at what he did during spring training, that was a little bit of an issue. He did give up 7 runs over the course of 8 innings, but it's not like he was really getting sung too hard. It was a very small sample size in general. I think that he got a little bit of a slow start, which did cause me to really bog down his numbers just a little bit and did put me on the over in the spot. I do think that the Cincinnati Reds are going to be able to get to Sanchez, and likewise, the Phillies, they played a whole bunch of overs in that first series against the Atlanta Braves. I do think that their bats are going to round into a little bit of better form as well, but that bullpen of the Phillies does have me concerned with Christopher Sanchez. He gives up a lot of contact as well, so going to be taking a look at the 9 at a plus 115 over. I think that that's a great number, and with regards to the Reds, plus 137 or higher, taking the plus price with them. Now we have my DK Network Rider pick, 907-908 on the betting board. It is the Slam Diego Padres playing host to the St. Louis Cardinals. Kyle Gibson goes for the Cards. Matt Waldron is on the bump for the Padres, and the Padres are anywhere between minus 105 to even money, and anywhere between minus 115 to minus 110 is your number on St. Louis. 8.5 is your total. The under is minus 120, and the over is even, seeing 1-8 out there. On the 8, the over is minus 115, under is minus 105. I do think that we're going to get some run scoring in this one. I recognize that Petco Park, very much a pitcher's ballpark, but that said, I did set my total at 80.8. I'm going to be looking at the over, but my write-up here is going to be on the San Diego Padres. I've identified this last few seasons, and it wasn't as demonstrative last season, but I do think that it's going to be quite demonstrative this year. these teams that play on Sunday Night Baseball, they try to bounce back on Monday, and they just always do seem to struggle. I believe that their win rate coming off of Sunday Night Baseball is darn near like 42% in the last few seasons, and you got a up there in years pitcher in Kyle Gibson, who last year he was able to put together a season which he delivered 15 wins. He's just someone that I think is going to get hit a bit harder this year. Last year, gave up 1.1 home runs per 9 innings, and he didn't do anything bad. He didn't do anything great. He had a 4.73 ERA with closer to about a 4.10 fielding independent, giving up about 2.6 walks per 9 innings, 7.4 strikeouts per 9. But if you looked at him in spring training, he had made 4 appearances at an ERA well north of 7, gave up 5 home runs in 15 innings. And Waldron, he looked really good during the spring. Finally got a taste of MLB baseball during the season last year, made 6 total starts, 8 appearances, and he did give up 2 home runs per 9 innings, but you can tell that the stuff, it was there. He was doing a nice job with his command, giving up just 2.5 walks per 9 innings, and then in the spring this year, posts up a sub-2 ERA, doesn't give up any home runs, looks really, really good coming into this campaign, and he gets to go against the St. Louis Cardinals team that a season ago, they were 24th in the big leagues with regards to runs per game produced on the road. Now, I do think that they're going to be a little bit better this season. You've got a young guy in the outfield and Victor Scott, who certainly has some wheels. I don't know about the power with him, but I do think that he's going to be able to do a solid job moving the line, and that's going to be big because you do have someone like Nolan Gorman who's got good power, but he's not necessarily consistent in the way that he gets on base. Mason Wynn, he's had a relatively solid start to the season thus far, but it's a very small sample size. He didn't look ready for our primetime a season ago. You've got Paul Goldschmidt. You've got Nolan Arenado. You know what to expect out of these two guys. Arenado, just one hit in the first 4 games of the season. That is certainly going to be trending upward. Both of these guys going to give you north of 275 average. Both of these guys going to give you 25-plus home runs. But for the San Diego Padres, even with Juan Soto being out of the fold, you still have Fernando Tatis Jr. You still got Manny Machado. A pair of guys with good power find a way to be able to get on base. And now the catcher spot is no longer an albatross. Last season, they were utilizing so many guys that just weren't panning out in general. Like Gary Sanchez was seeing a bunch of reps. You had Austin Nola, guys like this that just couldn't find a way on base. Luis Capistrano, it's a small 6-game sample size, but sitting at 391. Last season, he was probably their most consistent hitting catcher. I do think that he's going to continue that moving forward. Jake Cronenworth, after a brutal year last year, he looks to be a bit better. And for the San Diego Padres, just in general, they played better than their record indicated last season. If you look at their Pythagorean win slash loss, they should have been more like a 90-win team. They got unlucky with men in scoring position, and it's going to be a little bit tougher for them in the bullpen, not having Josh Hader out there. And you did see Tom Cosgrove in the first series of the season have his struggles, but he had a sub-3.3 ERA last season. You bring in Wandy Peralta, who was tremendous in the Yankees bullpen. Robert Suarez, I think that he's going to be able to put it together. You pick up on Yoel De Los Santos, and I do think that the Padres are staring at a relatively solid bullpen going up against one in the St. Louis Cardinals that we saw it on Sunday Night Baseball. They completely unraveled at the worst time. Ryan Helsley was truly the only pitcher last season coming out of the Cardinals bullpen that returns that adds a sub-3.5 ERA. They do pick up in the offseason Andrew Kittredge, like that pickup from the Tampa Bay Rays, but guys like Ryan Tepera, Andre Pallante, Jojo Romero, very inconsistent and very unreliable to say the least. I do think that Matt Waldron in for a big year, and I think that Kyle Gibson is a little bit long in the tooth. My DK Network write-up pick is going to be on the Padres money line. Won't delay up to a -135 there, and did somebody tell an 8.8? So you're at the 8-8.5 looking at the over, and my write-up is on that Padres money line. 9-9, 9-10 on the betting board. The LA Dodgers are going to be playing against the San Francisco Giants as Keaton Wynn is going to be on the bump for the Giants, and James Paxton, Big Maple, is going to be going for the Dodgers. The Dodgers do find themselves as massive favorites, anywhere between -210 to -230. +185 to +195 is your number on San Francisco. 8 to 8.5 is the total. On the 8, over is between -115 to -125. The under is between -105 to +105. On the 8.5, over and under anywhere between -105 to -115. And I did set my total at 9.2. Whether you've got an 8 or an 8.5, I'm going to be taking a look at the over. And I'm going to be willing to bank on Keaton Wynn here. I was willing to take anything of a +175 or higher. James Paxton had a little bit of a renaissance here last season, but I do have to wonder how consistent he's going to be after he was shut down towards back half of the season last year, was only able to make 19 starts, and he gave up the deep ball. 1.7 home runs surrendered per 9 innings. Swing and miss stuff still clearly there, but now he's up there in years. He's 35 years old. He had his struggles just at inopportune times, and for Keaton Wynn, I look at him as being a little bit of a high upside guy. There was a 50-50 split for the Giants utilizing an opener for him slash him starting. He did give up about 1.25 home runs per nine innings, but the command is really good. Only about 1.7 walks per nine innings, and he is backed up by a relatively solid bullpen. You've got a Giants team that they've got the Rodgers brothers who are both able to give you some solid innings. Camilo Duvall in the back half, he's relatively consistent. Ryan Walker, he's able to give you multiple innings as well. We could see a little bit of piggybacking there. And for the San Francisco Giants, this is a lineup that is very much revamped and revitalized with bringing in Matt Chapman. Chapman had two home runs in that game against the Padres over the weekend. For San Francisco in general, they put up four plus runs in every one of their games in that series against the San Diego Padres. So that's very encouraging, as you've got a lot of guys that they're consistent at getting on base. They're not necessarily super-duper power bats, but guys like Therio Estrada, Michael Conforto, Lamonte Wade Jr., they're going to give you like 15 to 20 home runs. They're going to find a way on. Wilmer Flores is the same way, and now you've got Jorge Soler, who can be hit or miss in terms of being able to reach base, but he was a 30-plus home run hitter while he was with the Miami Marlins and a few years ago when he was over with the Kansas City Royals. And Jung Woo Lee looks like he's figuring it out at the big league level going up against the Dodgers team, that this team has been able to put up 5-plus runs in, I believe, all but one of their games thus far this season. Shohei Ohtani seems to be a little bit distracted by everything that's happening off the field. Slow start for him thus far, no home runs, and has been providing about a 310 on base, but everyone else is picking up the slack. Mookie Betts going into yesterday had a home run in four straight games. Max Muncy came up big with his first home run of the campaign against the Cardinals on Sunday Night Baseball. Teoscar Hernandez already has three bombs. I mean, these guys, they're all able to move the line. You've got a Dodgers team as number one in the big leagues in terms of highest percentage of at-bats that does end in a walk. They find a way on. It's a little bit of a pitcher's ballpark out there in Los Angeles, but the offense is just that good, and you've got a Dodgers bullpen that was one of the best in the big leagues in terms of their ERA. Evan Phillips, who serves as a really good closer, they now bring in Nabel Chrisman, who is someone I think can have some upside as a little bit of a longer guy in the bullpen. Danny Hudson is someone I like, though. At all costs, you probably want to avoid Joe Kelly. Joe Kelly is a little bit of an albatross, and he can really cost you some games, but that said, I do take a look at this ordeal. Not necessarily bullish on James Paxton coming into the season, and I think the Keaton win is a real deal. Semi-total more around a 9.2. I'm going to be looking at the over. Anything plus 175 or higher, taking the Giants on the money line. 9-11, 9-12 on the betting board. It is the Baltimore Orioles playing us the Kansas City Royals. Michael Wacha, and hopefully we don't have to utilize the dying Pac-Man voice for him, because when he gets lit up, it's Michael Wacha, 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 Wacha. Ch-ch-ch. He is going to be going for the Royals, and Dean Kramer is on the bump for the homestanding Baltimore Orioles. Orioles, anywhere between minus 143 to minus 162 favorites, anywhere between plus 130 and plus 140 is that number on Kansas City. 8.5 is the total. The under is between minus 110 to a minus 120. The over is anywhere between even and minus 110. And for the Royals, I needed at least a plus 147 to be able to take a shot there, and I'm seeing the minus 143 at Circa. I'm going to be willing to lay that money line. We are seeing that run line in a lot of places, more around about a plus 140 or so. I was willing to take anything of a plus 135 or higher, but I'd rather just stick with that money line. That's a really good price that we're seeing at Circa, and that's the way that I'm going to ride with this one with Dean Kramer. He was able to have a solid year last year with the Baltimore Orioles. I still do have my trepidations with him. This is not a high swing and miss guy. Last year, in terms of strikeouts per nine rate, was a little bit better with about 8 strikeouts per nine innings, but does give up his fair share of hard contact, giving up about 1.4 home runs per nine innings. Not bad at giving up walks, not amazing at giving up walks. And for Michael Wacha, when he was out there on the mound last season as he dealt with injuries, he was actually really good for the San Diego Padres. He posted up a 3.22 ERA, gave up about a home run per nine innings. His walks per nine rate, that was more around 2.5, but now he has to get away from pitching out there in San Diego, where he was able to have a lot of his success, and now he's pitching in, shall we say, more hitter-friendly ballparks, and we've got a Kansas City Royals team behind him that has a lot of raw talent. The question is, are they going to be able to put it together? You got guys like an MJ Melendez, Mikel Garcia, Vinny Pascantino. These guys have some balance in terms of both power and being able to reach base. Garcia already has two home runs this season, but they just do not seem to have put it together quite yet. You've got a guy in Bobby Witt Jr. who, towards the second half of the season, was one of the better hitters in all baseball. He's picking up right where he left off. North of 1,000 slugging percentage in that first series of the season. He was very good on that front, but Hunter Renfroe, what are you going to be able to get out of him? Nelson Velasquez is someone I like, but he seemed to be a little bit of an all-or-nothing hitter towards the back half of the season. And for the Baltimore Orioles, they're not necessarily going to lead the league in average. They're not necessarily going to lead the league in power. They just find ways to be able to generate runs, though. I wish I could put it any other way, but you've got great balance with regards to this lineup. Like Gunnar Henderson, Ryan Mountcastle, Adley Rutschman. These are all guys that are probably not going to hit for north of 30 home runs. Mountcastle might, but they all find a way on base. They all do a solid job of giving you power when needed. You're able to have Ryan O'Hearn be sort of a utility guy slash someone that is able to come in to be able to just be a situational bat. You've got a lot of these guys. You're able to have good platooning with this team. Anthony Santander, if you're looking at a main power source, that'd be him. He's able to give you 30 home runs. And for the Orioles, they are going to be missing Felix Bautista in that bullpen, but it is still a solid bullpen. They pick up Craig Kimbrell, and that's a guy that I want to avoid, but Danny Colom, Yennier Cano, these are guys that had a sub-2.75 ERA last season. Dylan Tate, he missed all of last season 2 years ago. He was very reliable. I like Jacob Webb in the bullpen, and this is a Royals bullpen that is just quite frankly terrible. James MacArthur, I have no faith in him whatsoever. They sign Nick Anderson. They sign Will Smith. These are veterans that aren't very good. John Schreiber is actually someone I like, but all in all, I do think that the Orioles should be able to do a solid job in this ordeal. Kramer, I don't necessarily think is online with Waka, but I think that the Orioles have the lineup advantage and certainly the bullpen advantage, which is why I'm going to be willing to lay the money line here and avoid that run line. Did set my total at an 8.8 as well. I do think that the Royals bullpen unravels here. So looking at the over and the Orioles on the money line. 9.13, 9.14 on the betting board. It is the Tampa Bay Rays. They play off to the Texas Rangers. For the Walker Texas Rangers, Dane Dunning looks to get her Dunning, and Ryan Pepiot is on the bump for the Rays. The Rays are between -117 to -125 favorites, and between +102 to +111 is your number on the Rangers. 8.5 is the total, under is -115, and the over is -105. With the Rays, I'm going to be willing to ride with them on the money line. I set their line at a -122, so we're pretty much at the max buy point in a lot of spots, seeing that -117 is pretty juicy, in my opinion. Going to be willing to roll with that as Ryan Pepiot, towards back half of the season last year, was really able to put it together, had some struggles in 2022 with the LA Dodgers, but was able to put together a really nice year last year. 2.14 ERA, granted it was a little bit charmed. He had a 4.18 fielding independent. He had 8 strikeouts, so 1.1 walks per 9 innings. I think that his command got a whole heck of a lot better last year. I don't know if he's going to be able to quite match that, but you tell that he was able to do a rock solid job of being able to improve himself. And in spring training, he had more like a 4.66 ERA. His walks, he was able to keep those down. He was getting some relatively good swings and misses, was giving up a little bit of hard contact. I think that his ERA is going to be a little bit better than 4.66, but I think that we're somewhere between A and B. I don't think that he's going to be north of 5 ERA. Don't think we're going to be seeing that sub-3 ERA like we saw last season as well, but goes up against someone in Dane Dunning who actually improved quite a bit on the road last season. In his first two seasons in Texas, his home ERA was about 2 points lower than his road ERA. Last year, his road ERA was a full point lower than his home ERA, and he's been able to do a nice job of being able to mitigate arm contact, giving up just 1 home run per 9 innings last year, and he did a better job of not walking as many guys, only about 3 walks per 9 innings, but towards the beginning part of his career, he was a okay swing and miss guy, just 7.3 strikeouts per 9 innings a season ago, and he did have about a 4.27 fielding independent compared to a 3.70 ERA, and he's backed up by a Texas Rangers bullpen that it is improved with bringing in David Roberts, Kirby Yates, but that said, I do still look at it in. It's got some issues. You've got Jose Leclerc, who's a relatively solid reliever, but Josh Chaboris and guys like this are a little bit of a question mark. They, fortunately, are away from Chris Stratton and Will Smith getting jiggy with it, but for the Tampa Bay Rays, this is just a factory at being able to have great bullpen pieces. Pete Fairbanks, he's a pretty dominant closer. You've got the likes of a Jason Adam. I really like what you're able to get as well out of even someone like Garrett Clevenger, Sean Armstrong, the opener from yesterday. These are guys that are very rock solid there, and for the Tampa Bay Rays, you're probably not going to have that one guy that's going to have just a impressive home run total. You take a look at last season and he sucked for 8 days. He put up 31 home runs, but at the same time, you were able to have pretty much 6 different guys give you at least 19 home runs. I think that you're going to be seeing much of the same this season as Brandon Lau is someone that does a nice job of being able to put bat to ball. Josh Lowe is someone that you do like. Randy Arozarena, got to figure that he's good for about a 270 or so, 360 on base and 20 plus home runs. Jose Siri, if he can do a better job of being able to find a way on base, he's going to be a valuable bat for this team as well. And then for the Texas Rangers, this is one of the most fearsome lineups in the big leagues. They don't don't quite generate the same amount of runs that they do when they are at home. When they're away from home, they were averaging north of 5.8 runs per game at home last season, more like 5.1 runs per game on the road, and their power numbers did slip quite a bit when they're away from home, but you still have a lot of guys that they do a solid job moving the line, not necessarily striking out too much. You've got one of the best hitters in all of baseball in Corey Seager, who had 5 hits in his first 10 at-bats of the season. He missed a game in that series against the Chicago Cubs, so you do want to be monitoring that, but I feel like that was much more precautionary. You've got Adolis Garcia, who's already got a pair of home runs this season. Josh Young is one of the better up-and-coming hitters in baseball. Wyatt Langford, there's a lot of buzz around him for Rookie of the Year, rightfully so. They hit righties, they hit lefties. They do a nice job checking all those boxes, but that said, I do take a look at this Tampa Bay Rays team. Jose Calabreo, I think, is just very big for them being able to find a way to move the line, get on base, and I do think that the Tampa Bay Rays going to do a solid job here, and I think that these are a pair of younger pitchers in Dane Dunning, Ryan Pepiot, that are in for good years. I set my total at 8.4, so here at the 8.5, especially in a pitcher-friendly ballpark in Tampa Bay, I'm going to be looking at the under, and with the Rays, one to lay up to a minus 121 on that money line. 9.15, 9.16 on the betting board. It is the Toronto Blue Jays on the road facing off against the Houston Astros. Ronald Blanco goes for the Astros, and Bowden Francis is on the bump for Toronto. Toronto is an underdog of any between plus 120 and plus 128. Meanwhile, with Houston, they're between a minus 135 to a minus 142 favorite. Sign is a total over and under any between minus 105 to a minus 115. And the Astros made them a minus 145 favorite. I'm going to be willing to take them on the money line. Very strange to see the Astros at 0-4. And this Astros bunch does have a lot of guys that they typically do struggle coming out of the gates. Alex Bregman, he always has a rough first month of the season. I don't know how or why, but always happens to him. Yordan Alvarez is a little bit cold to start the season. He could be a little bit hit or miss towards the beginning part of the season along Chaz McCormick. You know that Jose Altuve is going to come out there. He's going to rip the ball. He's already been able to do a solid job of that thus far this season, but for the Astros, just 2 home runs in that series against the Yankees. I do think that that's going to be improving in this series. So I actually liked what I saw out of Bowden Francis last season. He had a .173 ERA. Now, fielding independent was closer to about 4 as he gave up 5 home runs at 36 in the third innings, but command is relatively solid. He's able to get nearly 9 punch outs per 9 innings. A lot of that was in more like 2 inning relief appearances, so you do have to question the length here, but you know that the Toronto Blue Jays are going to be able to do a solid job of putting bat to ball themselves. After a little bit of a down year last year, Vlad Guerrero Jr., he's already got a 450-foot tank shot to your credit, 500 on base in that first series of the season against the Rays. Do love to see that. You've got guys like George Springer, Bo Bichette, that have functional power, that do a nice job being able to get on base. Alejandro Kirk, don't call his name, he does a solid job being able to get on base as well. Love the acquisition of Justin Turner. And for the Blue Jays, they did lose a few pieces like Jordan Nix from that bullpen a season ago, but you still have a relatively solid bullpen. They are dealing with a few injuries, so they're not going to be having Jordan Romano in this game, but someone like a Tim Mesa is able to be very rock solid with a sub-3 ERA last season. They picked up Genesis Cabrera, who's been a relatively solid acquisition for them. Chad Green, he's functional for them as well. For the Houston Astros, they did lose a few pieces in the offseason from that bullpen, but now you pick up Josh Hader. He, along with Ryan Presley, should be dominant in that 8th/9th inning duo. Brian Abreu, I like him. The overall depth of the Astros in terms of bullpen from what they had a season ago, it is a little bit down, but all in all, I do think that they're going to be able to get some good production moving forward out of Ronald Blanco. He's got really good raw stuff. Had a 4.50 ERA last season, but he was able to get 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. Needs to calm the walks. North of 4.5 walks per 9 innings. He misses command sometimes, but you tell that it's just overall nastiness. It was able to increase as the season went along. He had a spring training that was a little bit up and down, but again, you saw the good raw stuff there, and I think that he's going to be able to put it together moving forward, and with Bo Bichette, you know, with a little bit of an injury for the Blue Jays, that helps him out all the further. So I did set the Astros at a minus 145. I like them on the money line, and did set my total at an 8.9. I do think that both of these bullpens do step up for these pitchers, and I think that both of these starters a little bit undervalued. So I do like the under, and I'm going to be willing to take the Astros up to a minus 144 on the money line. 9.17, 9.18 on the betting board. It is the Oakland AAA's playing us to the Boston Red Sox. Tanner Houck goes for the Sox, and old Joe Boyle is on the bump for the A's. Boyle rules, except for on the money line, as they're between plus 118 to plus 126 with Mr. Boyle out there, anywhere between minus 132 to minus 142. Your number on Boston. 8 is your total, over and under, anywhere between minus 105 to a minus 115. And when it comes to the Red Sox, set them at a minus 140. So right now I'm seeing a minus 132 at Circa. I'd be certainly willing to lay that, willing to go up to a minus 139 here for a bunch in Boston that has Rafael Devers, one of the most dominant hitters in all baseball. And for the Red Sox, they do have some big-time home and road splits. Last season, they hit about 35 points better when they were at home rather than away from home. And they've got a few questionable bats in the lineup. Jaron Duran, Trevor Story, Tristan Casas, they all struggled in that first series. Casas had north of a 4-arm base back out of the season last year. Jaron Duran really put it together when he was at home. Away from home, had his issues. And for Trevor Story, it's been a few years since we've seen him be a functional starting everyday baseball player, and I don't know if we're going to be getting that moving forward, but love the Tyler O'Neill acquisition. Had a pair of home runs in that first series of the season. I think that he's going to be able to give you quite a bit moving forward. Masataka Yoshida doesn't necessarily hit for power, but does a good job of being able to move the line. And for the Oakland A's, this team was the most miserable offense at home last season. As a matter of fact, they had the fewest runs per game of any team in all baseball, and players not named J.D. Davis currently have zero home runs for them. J.D. Davis, nice acquisition, had a nice first series of the season against Cleveland Guardians, but outside of him, what else are you going to be able to get? Ryan Nota did have a 350 on base last season, but doesn't hit for a lot of power, doesn't necessarily give you hits in general, just finds a way to be able to draw some walks. Nick Allen is someone that last season was able to give you a few okay at-bats, but he's not necessarily consistent in terms of being able to get on base. J.J. Bleday is a little bit of an upside guy along Zach Galof, but they both have had their struggles beginning the season as well. And then for the Oakland A's, this is not some sort of a just dominant bullpen. Danny Jimenez, he's able to do a nice job towards the back half of games, but who's going to be getting him the ball? You've got guys like Austin Adams, TJ McFarlane, guys that maybe had like one solid year in the big leagues, but past that, they just have not really been able to execute throughout their careers. And for Tanner Houck, I actually do like his overall game. He had a 5 ERA a season ago. You can tell that he was one of the more unlucky pitchers in all of baseball. He got about 8.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, was giving up in that neighborhood about 1.2 to 1.3 home runs per 9 innings, but I do think that Tanner Houck is going to be able to put it together moving forward, and I do think that with his fielding independent, much better than his ERA, that's an indicator that, hey, you know what, we could expect a little bit of a bounce back this season. He had more like a 4.18 ERA when he was away from home last season, and I do think that he's going to take it to an Oakland A's team that has a guy in Joe Boyle that I actually do think is going to be solid moving forward, but what is his command going to be like? In spring training, he was giving up well north of 5 walks per 9 innings, and when he was in the Cincinnati Reds organization in their minor league system, he didn't have a single year where he gave up fewer than 6 walks per 9 innings. Swing and miss stuff is amazing. In his 3 years at the minor league level, north of 12.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, and in his 3-start sample size last year with Oakland, he did get that down to about 3 walks per 9 innings, but I just can't make too much out of a 3-start sample size. I do think that he's going to be able to keep the Red Sox hitters off guard, but I just fear that he's going to knock himself out of this game very early, and then you have a bullpen for the Oakland A's that quite frankly stinks. So I did set my line at a minus 140, taking the Red Sox on the money line, and did set my total at an 8.3. Here at the 8, I'm going to be looking at the overs. I do think that we get a lot of bullpen use in general to go along with the Red Sox money line. 919, 920 on the betting board. The Cleveland Guardians, they third face off against the Seattle Mariners. You've got Emerson Hancock on the bump for the Mariners, and Tristan McKenzie is on the bump for Cleveland. Cleveland is a slight favorite to a slight underdog. Anywhere between minus 103 to minus 115 is your price on them for Seattle. Going to be finding them anywhere between about even money to minus 110. And your total on scheme, it is 8. The over is anywhere between even money and minus 110. Meanwhile, the under, that is anywhere between minus 110 to a minus 120. And I'm going to be willing to roll with the Mariners. Set them as a minus 113 favorite. So do like them on this rather pick'em line for Emerson Hancock. He had a few relatively okay starts last season. Only a 3-start sample size, but gave up one home run in 12 innings. Didn't give up a whole heck of a lot of walks. Not necessarily a massive swing and miss guy, but all in all, I do think that he's someone that has quite a bit of upside, and I think that Tristan McKenzie is a nice upside pick as well. He only made 4 starts last season. It was very much touch and go. He got out there towards the back half of the season, but for Tristan McKenzie, you look at what he was able to do 2 seasons ago when he was fully healthy during that 2022 campaign. 2.96 ERA, was getting 9 strikeouts, fewer than 2.2 walks per 9 innings. Did a nice job mitigating hard contact, and he's going to be in one of the more pitcher-friendly ballparks in all of baseball in Seattle. Now, that's going to be hurting this Cleveland Guardians lineup that just frankly doesn't have a lot of guys that hit the deep ball. Jose Ramirez had north of 20 home runs last season, and Bo Naylor, if he's able to get some solid at-bats, might be able to give you a little bit of something. But, I mean, these are guys that have guys like Andrés Giménez, Ramirez, who I mentioned before, Stephen Kwan. They had a 275 or higher in that year in 2022 when they made the postseason. Last year, they really just booped out. Will Brandon has been very inconsistent with his bat. You're going to need Brian Rocchio to be able to find a way to be able to move the line, and then for the Seattle Mariners, despite the fact that they lose guys like Eugenio Suarez, they've got the better lineup, in my opinion. Big dumper, Cal Raleigh. He's able to give you some good power, and they pick up Mitch Garver as well. So they're able to really interchange these two catchers. Both of them are able for some power, are able to move the line, especially Mitch Garver in terms of finding a way on base. J.P. Crawford, not a tremendous power bat, but someone that is able to find a way to be able to move the line. They pick up Mitch Haniger, who every time he's put on a Seattle Mariners uniform, he's been relatively solid. I like Julio Rodriguez's game as well. I think that he's going to be a shining star this season. And for the Mariners, they just manufacture good bullpen pitching in general. You got guys like a Taylor Cicado, Trent Thornton, who were very good for the team last season. They no longer have Penn Murphy in the fold, but if Ryan Stanek can get back to what he was two seasons ago when he was posting up an ERA of a 1.15, that'll be massive for this team. And you've got a Cleveland Guardians team that they've got one of the better bullpens in the big leagues themselves. Emmanuel Clase, James Karinchak, that's a great 8th and 9th inning duo for this bunch. You've also got Scott Barlow, who's able to do a relatively solid job as well. I think that Karinchak probably going to be out of the fold for this game, but he still have someone like Tim Aaron. He really struggled last season, but I do like him as a little bit of an upside guy this season along with Eli Morgan. So I do think that both of these pitchers are going to go out there, give you a relatively solid start. I set my line at a 7.6 in terms of the total. I like it under. And with the Mariners, set them as a slight -113 favorite. So one to lay up to -112 on this Mariners money line to go along the under. 921, 922 on the betting board. The Atlanta Braves are on the road facing off against the Chicago White Sox. Chris Flexen goes for the Sox. Charlie Morton is on bump for Atlanta. Atlanta, a very sizable favorite. You're going to be getting them between -215 to -235. Anywhere between +185 and +$2 is your number on the Southsiders. 9 is the total over and under. Anywhere between -105 to -115. And you're going to be laying between -130 to -135 on the Braves run line. And I set my run line more around to -150. I'm going to be willing to lay that run line. This Atlanta Braves team is just so beastly in terms of their offense. The only way this game goes under is if the Chicago White Sox don't do their part with regards to hitting, and I actually do think that that is going to be the case, but you just take a look at this Atlanta Braves lineup, like Austin Riley, Marcell Ozuna, Ozzie Albies, Ronald Acuna Jr., all guys that had 25-plus home runs last season. They get Adam Duvall back in the fold. He's a good power bat. Matt Olson had 50-plus home runs last year, and darn near all these guys hit north of a 260 as well. Like, you've got good righty and lefty splits with all these guys. Orlando Arcia is off to a relatively solid start to the season. There is not a weak link on this team, and for Chris Flexen, well, he has a weak link. Now, getting away from Colorado should be able to help him out. He had a 6.86 ERA last season. When he came over from the KBO in 2021 for the Seattle Mariners, wasn't too bad, but last 2 years have been big giant stinkers, as he's never been a good swing and miss guy. Last year, he was able to get about 6.5 or so strikeouts per 9 innings, and the big key for him is that knowing that he's not going to be a high strikeout guy, he needs to work on the walks, which were north of 3 per 9 innings, gave up over 2 home runs per 9 innings, and Chicago sometimes can play very favorably, sometimes not so much, and you know, it's unfavorable for the White Sox. The fact that they have no idea how to draw walks whatsoever, dead last in the big leagues last year in terms of walks drawn on a per at-bat basis. You've got a lineup that does have Luis Robert, who's been able to give the team multiple home runs already. He does a solid job of being able to just hit for average in general, but you just don't have anyone that's really able to give you consistently north of 325 on base for this team. Andrew Vaughn, he's willing to take a base. Andrew Benintendi, he's been throughout his career a relatively solid hitter as well, but Nicky Lopez is an albatross at the bottom of the fold. Martin Maldonado is a terrible hitting catcher. Eloy Jimenez has been all over the place throughout his career. You never know what you're going to get out of Yoan Moncada. I mean, this is a brutal situation, and for the Chicago White Sox, this bullpen just stinks on ice. You're looking at guys like Davey Garcia, Tim Hill, trying to come in and hold down the fort, and, well, they wouldn't be able to hold down a tent with duct tape. So it's not necessarily too terrific, to say the least. You've got Steven Wilson, who might be able to give you a few solid innings, but they lose their top bullpen pieces from a season ago, and I do like this Atlanta Braves bullpen. Ever since they picked up Pierce Johnson about a year or so ago in a Braves uniform, a sub-150 ERA, now they've got Tyler Mazick, A.J. Minter firing all cylinders after they were banged up last season. Jesse Chavez is a very good long option for the team. Aaron Bummer might be a little bit of a bummer, but all in all, really do like this bullpen with Rossy Iglesias closing out games, and I do think that Charlie Morton going to be able to hold down the fort in this ordeal. It's a pitcher in Charlie Morton who does have some pretty extreme home run road splits throughout the entirety of his career, and he's bounced around quite a bit, but even last year, he was still able to get north of 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, kept the ball in the yard, was giving up just 0.8 home runs per 9 innings, needs to do a good job, be able to mitigate walks, gave up 4.5 walks per 9 innings, but against the Chicago White Sox team, it's a perfect matchup because they'll swing at anything. So I did set the Braves at a -150 on the run line, looking there, and did set my total at 8.8. I think that the Braves tattoo our good friend in Mr. Flexen, but I just don't think the White Sox offense does their part as well. So looking at the 9-under and the Atlanta Braves on the run line, 923, 924 on the betting board, the LA Angels hit the road face-off against the Miami Marlins. Max Meyer goes for the fish, and Chase Silseth is on the bump for the Halos. Angels are between even money to as bad as a -102, as good as -105, and between -113 to -120 is your number on Miami. 8.5 is the total. The over is between -110 to a -120. Actually, as a matter of fact, it's between even money and -120, both on the over and the under. So shop around accordingly there, and with this, I set the Marlins at a -134. I'm going to be willing to roll with them on the money line now. It's a pretty pathetic Marlins lineup in terms of being able to generate power. Jake Berger last year had 25-plus home runs, and you're able to get a bit of pop in the bat from Jazz Chisholm, but it's a Miami Marlins team that's going to need to play station-to-station baseball, which means that Luis Arraez, who starts out the year 2 of 18, he's really going to need to pick it up. They kicked the tires on Tim Anderson. It looks like he's just a corpse of what he once was. This is not great, but Brian De La Cruz, he's able to give you some power. He's able to do a solid job moving the line. Can you get anything, though, out of guys like Asus Sanchez, Avisio Garcia in the outfield? That's going to be a big question mark. And then you take a look at this LA Angels team, and Mike Trout is awesome. Had a home run on opening day, and you know that he's going to be able to give you good professional at-bats. Anthony Rendon, though, in 3 games, he's had as many hits as myself. He appears to be just completely disinterested in the game of baseball whatsoever. Taylor Ward has been able to give you a pair of home runs thus far, but past that, you just don't have anything else. Brandon Drury is able to give you a little bit of power, but Zach Neto does not belong anywhere near an MLB lineup. Miguel Sano has been absolutely awful the last few seasons. I think that he was put on the injured list just for being fat a few years ago, and I'm not even kidding when I say that. Jordell, Mickey Moniak, these are high upside guys that just have no consistency whatsoever, and the Angels bullpen is just a bunch of stink. You've got Luis Garcia, who just got completely destroyed in that series against Baltimore. Adam Simber had north of a 6 ERA last season. It's looking like it's going to be a rough year for him. Jose Cicerano is a little bit of an upside guy. You've got Carlos Acevedo. You've got Matt Moore. These guys are relatively okay. And I actually like Chase Silseth as a pitcher. Silseth last season had a 3.96 ERA. He got about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings. The walks are an issue. He gives up some hard contact, giving up about a home run and a half per 9 innings. And I believe that he had some sort of a head injury last season as well. That was a bit of an issue. But that said, I do like his overall game. But I do think that Max Meyer is going to be a nice upside guy for this Miami Marlins team as well. He made just 2 starts last season. He pitched a whopping 6 innings at the big league level. Gave up 5 runs. So it's a very small sample size to be able to base anything off of. But for Max Meyer, if you take a look at what he was able to do at the minor league level, he had good swing and miss stuff. And this is just a farm system in general in Miami that they've been able to do a nice job of being able to put together these pitching prospects. This is one of the latest ones to come, and I do think that he's going to be able to put it together at the big league level. You take a look at what he was able to do during spring training, and he did not give up a single run in his 3 appearances. Now, granted, they didn't have him out there for very long whatsoever, but still, I do think that he's going to be able to put it all together this season. After last year at the AAA level in Jacksonville, he was getting about 10 strikeouts and fewer than 3 walks per 9 innings, was mitigating our contact. Really like to see that, and I do think that Meyer is going to be able to do a solid job holding down an Angels team that, quite frankly, I am not bullish on. I set my line at a -134. I like the Marlins on the money line, and did set my total at 7.8. I think that Chase Silseth is going to give a great start here. I just don't think that the Angels lineup is very good, and this is one of the best pitchers' ballparks in all baseball. I do think that the Marlins bullpen as well is going to be able to step up in a relatively big way. They do lose a few pieces from last year, but got Oscar Blazoben, who's able to give you sub 4 ERA, not having AJ Puck in the bullpen. That's a little bit rough, but Tanner Scott is relatively trustworthy, and George Soriano, a really good long guy as well. So I do like the under, and I do like the Marlins on the money line, willing to lay up to a -133 there, 925, 926 on the main board. The Detroit Tigers hit the road face off against the New York Mets. Sean Manea goes for the Mets. And Reese Olson is on the bump for the Tigers. The Tigers find themselves as +110 to +118 underdogs, anywhere between -125 to -130. That number on the Mets, 7.5 to 8 is the total. On the 8, under is between -105 to -120. The over is anywhere between even money and -115. On the 7.5, over is -115. And the under is -105. And I did set my total at 7.6. Seeing mostly 8s out there, I'm going to be taking a look at the under. And it's a circumstance where I do like the plus price with the Detroit Tigers. I needed at least a +113 to be able to take a shot on them. With Reese Olson last season, he was able to do a pretty solid job for the Detroit Tigers, a team that has just so much young talent in general. It is a team that I want to be buying in on a little bit. And for Olson, he had a relatively solid spring training. His swing and miss stuff appeared to be up after last season. He was still getting about 9 strikeouts and fewer than 3 walks per 9 innings. He had about a 4 ERA and a 4 fielding independent. He got exactly what he deserved. He was able to put things together relatively well. And I do think that even though he does need to learn to be a little bit more consistent towards back half of the season, he was wearing down just a touch. I think that the upside with Reese Olson is very bright. Meanwhile, for Sean Manea, he just had a nightmarish first month and a half or so of the season for the San Francisco Giants, and he was able to put it together. Now, the question is, in longer spurts, is Sean Manea going to be the Sean Manea that we all know and love from back when he was with the Oakland A's, back when he was able to get that no-hitter on his ledger? Because back in the day, he was able to do a very, very solid job, and he was looked at as a big-time pitching prospect, but ever since that season, ever since he was with the Oakland A's in general, has really been a bit of a disappointment, and he is going to be backed up by a relatively okay bullpen for the New York Mets. I would be overselling it if I called it amazing or anything like that, but now you've got Edwin Diaz back in the fold. That'll help them out. Drew Smith is someone that's able to give you some relatively solid innings along the likes of Adam Ottavino. They pick up Jake Diekman, who is able to have a career revitalization with the Tampa Bay Rays. And then on the flip side, we got a Detroit Tigers team that they're a functional bullpen. They don't really have any guy that is going to go out there and light the world on fire, but got a lot of guys that they just give you like a 3.5 or so ERA. Shelby Miller was really good with the LA Dodgers a season ago. Tyler Holton, Will Vest, Andrew Chafin. These are all guys that are able to do a solid job of holding down the fort. Now, the question is for the Tigers, a bottom five offense in baseball last year in terms of run creation, are they going to be able to upgrade that? As you've got Kerry Carpenter, who he towards back out of the season last year was someone that was able to come to the forefront, already has a home run to his credit this season. Spencer Torkelson, he put together a 25-plus home run season last year, and after a really miserable start to the season, he had a nice back half of the campaign as well. So that's something that you're able to look to and you're able to feel very encouraged about. But now they have to go up against someone in Sean Manea that it does feel like he was able to get his confidence and his swagger back really ever since the middle of May last season. Again, do have my question marks in terms of the length that he's going to be able to provide and some of the just spark in general that you're going to be able to get. But you do take a look at this Mets lineup, and that's probably the biggest albatross to them in this one, as they just did not put together any runs whatsoever in that series against the Milwaukee Brewers. You did have Pete Alonso hit a nice home run in that series against the Milwaukee Brewers, but Starling Marte, he's relatively solid at moving the line, is able to give you a little bit of power, but Francisco Lindor has been incredibly inconsistent. Brandon Nimmo has seen a bit of a drop-off in his production. Francisco Alvarez actually had a really nice series against the Brewers, but is he going to be able to do that moving forward? Harrison Bader, can he be consistent for one and for two? Can he actually stay out there on the field as well? And I do think that it's a rough circumstance here for the New York Mets. I just don't know if Sean Manea is going to be able to put together a lot of 5-plus inning starts that are going to be rock solid, as he was good in short bursts last season. When you needed him to go deep, he just was not able to do so. And I do think that for the New York Mets, just moving forward, it's a team that I don't really want too much of a part of, because I do think that this offense is going to struggle, especially with a Tigers just overall rotation that I think is good. I like Reese Olson and the Tigers here. Was willing to take a +113 or higher with them, and did something I told 7.6. So here at the 8, looking at the under, and I'm going to be looking at that Tigers money line, and we're wrap things up with 927, 928 on the betting board. The Arizona Diamondbacks play us to the New York Yankees. Luis Eel goes for the Yankees, and Ryan Nelson is on the bump for the Diamondbacks. The Diamondbacks do find themselves themselves as slight underdogs, anywhere between plus 105 to plus 114. Meanwhile, between minus 120 to minus 125, your price on the Yankees set as a total over and under between minus 105 to minus 115. And I did set my total at 9.2. I like the under. Now, with Ryan Nelson, very strange splits last season. He had an ERA that was north of 7.75 at home and a sub-3.75 road ERA. I do think that that's going to iron out this year. I do think that that was a little bit of just an oddity in general for Ryan Nelson. He had a rough start to the year last year, and he was very up and down, to say the least, but I could sense that he was starting to put it together towards the month of September. He gave up two runs or fewer in three out of his last four appearances, so that was something that was pretty encouraging for Nelson. He's not necessarily like a strikeout maestro or anything like that. He only got about six punch-outs per nine innings, but does a solid job not giving up a whole bunch of walks. It's just all about, can he mitigate the hard contact? And for the New York Yankees, really good series out there against the Houston Astros. Want to see a little bit more from some of these young guys, like Oswaldo Cabrera was amazing in that last series. Is that a little bit of a flash in the pan, or is that something that's going to be real? Like, heck, Aaron Judge, he only had two hits in that series against the Houston Astros, and they swept him. Juan Soto, he looks to be an amazing pickup through one series. It's only one series, but that was tremendous. Anthony Volpe, after he was a bit of a disappointment last season, he's really taken some strides forward. And even Giancarlo Stanton, who he still awaits some money, he was able to home run in that series as well. Anthony Rizzo looks to be getting back to the Anthony Rizzo of old. So I have to be feeling quite bullish about this Yankees lineup, but I'm more bullish about the Yankees bullpen. They were a number one bullpen in the big leagues last year in terms of ERA. And you bring back a lot of the guys from last season. While being able to pick up Caleb Ferguson, they do lose Wandy Peralta, but the likes of Ian Hamilton, Jonathan Loaisiga, these guys are very reliable. You're currently dealing with Tommy Kahnle being out with an injury, but still, this is a bunch that they've got a lot of guys. They're able to give you good innings, and for the Arizona Diamondbacks, they were a below-average bullpen last season. I do think that they might be a little bit better this year. I'm still banking on Joe Mantiply being able to return to form. It looks like that might not be the case, but you got the other Nelson and Kyle Nelson, who's been very reliable in this bullpen. I like the game of Ryan Thompson. He's able to give you some good innings. Miguel Castro, Luis Frias, these are guys that are a little bit more of a roll of the dice, but Scott McGough, he was one of the more unlucky pitchers in all baseball among relievers last season. And for Luis Eel, he's got really, really good stuff. He was limited to just one start last season in the six starts that he made two seasons ago. During the 2021 season, he was actually really, really good. He was putting together a strikeouts per nine rate that was north of 11. Now, he's a little bit of a Rick the Wild Thing Vaughn sort of candidate. He is going to be all over the place. He is going to walk some guys. He's going to miss his target, and that's going to cause for some hard contact in general, but he can get guys out. So I do think that there is some upside here, and I do think that that's going to keep the Arizona Diamondbacks a little bit off kilter in this one, as I do think that you're going to be able to have a big season moving forward out of Corbin Carroll. Corbin Carroll, first series of the season, was a little bit silent, but I like what he's able to bring to the table. Christian Walker last year, he was able to slug out 30 plus home runs. He's already got two. Now, granted, it was against the Colorado Rockies, and you had Lourdes Gurriel pound three bombs in that series because the Rockies just suck. But that said, with the Arizona Diamondbacks, do like this lineup, especially with them picking up Eugenio Suarez. I do think that Alec Thomas has a little bit of upside, but I feel like this 10 total is just a little bit too far. I expect a bounce back from Ryan Nelson. I do think that Luis Gil, coupled with that bullpen, is going to be able to hold down the Diamondbacks, but in the end, I do think that the Diamondbacks get the job done. I'm banking on a better season here from Ryan Nelson, and I did set the Diamondbacks at a minus 114. So, when that Diamondbacks money line, and I do like this 10 under, and that'll wrap things up for the Monday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. A big thanks to our good friend Curtis Rogers over there at 710 Seattle Sports for joining me in the last segment. If you do like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, whatever for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter / X timeline, @GNN_41. Keep in mind, letters AM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire on whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review coming at you guys every single day throughout the baseball season. That means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You never want to find yourself out on the water fishing without the essentials. So it's best to always pack a Columbia PFG Solar Stream Elite hoodie to protect against the sun. I mean, it provides great protection and it's really breathable so you don't get hot. That's a win-win. Columbia PFG has a lot of great gear. So before you head out on the water, head over to Columbia.com/PFG to shop their performance fishing gear.